You are listening to the Everything You Want to Know About Therapy, But We're Too Afraid to Ask podcast with your host, Jennifer Trevelli, and co-host, Jessica Strang. If you ever wanted to start therapy but didn't know where to begin, you've come to the right place. In this podcast, we will offer a Therapy 101 by interviewing experts in the field and asking them anything and everything you wanted to know about therapy before you make your first appointment.
Cece Burke is a Chicago-based licensed clinical social worker with a specialty in working with adolescents and adults struggling with anxiety, depression, trauma, insomnia, as well as other issues. After graduating from the University of Illinois with her bachelor's in science, she went on to receive her master's in social service administration from the University of Chicago. In her work, Cece integrates evidence-based treatment protocols, including CBT, ERP, DBT, mindfulness, and ACT. In addition, Cece is trained in SPACE, supportive parenting for anxious childhood emotions, which is a treatment designed for parents to help them learn skills to assist their children in building confidence and reducing anxiety. Currently, Cece is the director of adolescent services at DASC, the Depression and Anxiety Specialty Clinic of Chicago, a large practice that provides individual and group services for clients as well as clinician training experiences and partnerships within the Chicagoland community. Cece believes that at the core of every successful treatment is a strong therapeutic relationship. So she utilizes an authentic and non-judgmental collaborative setting, and humor and irreverence play strong roles in her work. As you note from this interview, Jennifer and I enjoyed a lively and anything but sleep-inducing conversation with our guest expert, Cece Burke, as we explore the topic of sleep. Cece Burke, welcome to the show.
What's up?
Welcome. Welcome. Hi. We're so excited to have you here with us.
I'm excited to be here. Thank you.
I know. And actually, we I was just telling Jen before we hopped on with you that we haven't recorded since, what, July, Jen? Because we've just been living life. So
yeah.
We've missed it. So we're a little bit rusty, so maybe.
Yes.
So if you sound like you're like, they don't know what they're doing, well, first of all, we don't. So because we're just not a profession. But second of all, we really haven't in such a long time. So, you know, you're going to help us kind of get back to the swing of things.
I mean, you're in good company. It's not every day I do a podcast. So we're good.
Well, there you go.
Yes. Yes. So, Cece, we start off by asking all of our guests, how did you begin studying psychology? Kind of what brought you, what did you study in school? Kind of what brought you to your current path?
Sure. I mean, I think I've always been interested in it since I was a youth. So in high school, like, I mean, obviously informally studying it, I'm not Lisa Conway, who apparently had like a million classes on psychology.
Oh, you must have heard that interview then.
Oh yeah. She's a friend of mine. So
okay.
She's very impressive. So yeah, like I mean I struggled with my own bouts of depression in high school and was terrible at sports and like tried to find any niche that I possibly could. And I found myself in social service board, which like was my home away from home. So, you know, I tried all the things really like that was my calling. It felt like, and then in college, I went to University of Illinois. I studied human development and family studies, which this is so like unnecessary, but it was in the Department of Agriculture Sciences. Nobody knows why. Like it doesn't make any
what? Wow. Okay. I'm gonna have to look it up like later.
Yeah. Literally like why though? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
But that's when I really like really started feeling more passionate about it and did a whole lot of like internships and like early childhood development classes. And it was a lot of fun. And I just like love people. I just love people and I love the way their brains work. And even when it doesn't make sense. Yeah. And I just kind of thrived. So then I was applying for like random jobs my senior year and nothing was really working out. So I said, F it, I'm just going to go to grad school. And so I went to UChicago SSA, which is now Crown School. And I reject that. it's always SSA in my mind. And yeah, and I just absolutely loved it. So that's kind of my origin story.
And then what made you do specifically, you know, become a social worker? Like, because there's so many branches, right, that we always talk about. Mm-hmm. And to be fair, like to our audience, who some people are therapists and or they are, you know, therapy minded in the sense that they've been to therapists. But a lot of people that listen to this podcast sometimes don't know the difference between counselor, psychologist, LCSW, yeah. MA, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? So like what made you choose that particular branch?
That's a good question. I mean, I would say like, the short answer is there's really like no difference if you are providing like outpatient therapy.
Right.
But I mean, if I'm being totally transparent, like the two main reasons, number one was less school and the second one and like, you know, scholarships and things like that. But the second one though, like, which truly is the case, I really appreciated that social work was a bit more like holistic and kind of like mm-hmm. dynamic. So I really think it like the focus of social work is more expansive, I guess, sometimes mm-hmm. than, but I also don't want to like shit on my fellow psychologists.
No, I mean, here's the thing, like if you get it done faster, you know, like we're the fools who are there forever, you know. And I was like, exactly. I felt like I never I was always in school. I was like, literally, yeah. What are you doing this weekend? I'm in school. Yeah. Like I did not have yeah. a life most of yep. my 20s. So yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
And then currently, what is your position?
So I am a staff therapist. The director of adolescent services and on the leadership team of DASC Chicago, DASC standing for Depression and Anxiety Specialty Clinic. Yeah.
All right. Amazing. And how long have you been in that position?
Oh man. I think it's like 8 years now.
Wow. Okay.
Wow. For HS. Yeah.
And what, kind of what is your role there? What are your specialties? What do you do there?
Sure. I mean, I would say like I broadly work with most presentations with the exception of ED, not my strong suit, substance abuse, not my strong suit. So like most of the things, but I would definitely consider myself to have more specialization and like in primarily anxiety disorders, certainly working with adolescents as my title, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. suggests, and parents. And I'm actually like recently, me and one other colleague, Annie, were recently space trained, which is supportive parenting of, anxious childhood emotions, and that's been super fun. So working a lot with parents. Ooh. yeah it's really cool. Eli Leibowitz created the treatment and he's fantastic. Yeah, and then obviously I'm on here for insomnia. So insomnia, certainly work with insomnia. There's sleep irregularities, ADHD, also well trained in DBT for, you know, emotion dysregulation presentations. So I think that kind of covers it.
Yeah, so all the things. I mean, it sounds like a lot of it, but to be honest, well-rounded, that sense, you know, because you get,
yeah.
these are the things that people mm-hmm. come in for. But you know, what's interesting is that one of the things that I started adding to my when I see somebody for an initial consultation and I ask the question, I started adding it because I realized how important it was. And that's why we wanted to talk to you today was I ask mm-hmm. about sleep a lot. And I ask yeah. about, you know, the regularity of their sleep and what it looks mm-hmm. like. And then they tell me like how many hours, and then it's like, but is it, you know, consistently the 7 yep. hours, or are you waking up? So and that's so when Lisa had said, you know, I know somebody, I'm like, ooh, okay. And then you told us your specialty. We're interested in how you became interested in the topic of anxiety mm-hmm. and sleep, or just sleep. We can start wherever right. you want with that.
Well, the short answer is because I struggle with both of them.
Amazing.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. I believe in practicing what I preach, and sleep has always been pretty erratic for me. And then an anxiety is like pretty universal, right? I mean, mm-hmm. not everyone struggles with an anxiety disorder so much, but mm-hmm. everybody experiences anxiety. Like it is a universal yeah. thing we can all relate to, and right. we can all benefit from like tools and skills to kind of navigate it, right? So like, mm-hmm. Yeah. And then when I started to learn from my colleagues that there's an excellent treatment for insomnia, and it's very pragmatic, I would say, which is kind of a breath of fresh air when you're a therapist, like yeah. I have to do like math and stuff. And I love math. So like, I don't, it just like kind of gives my brain a little bit of a break from like the, you know, the very analytic yeah. portion of mm-hmm. therapy. And it's because it's so pragmatic, it's pretty straightforward. It's not easy, but it's pretty straightforward. There is a formula to, you know, behavioral sleep medicine. And I love that. And sleep recalibrates itself pretty quickly on its own, given the right practices. And so you see the benefits super quickly, which is really, really cool. But yeah, I mean, I know full well, like how distressing it is to be awake mm-hmm. all the time and like not be able to sleep when all you want to do is sleep. And so I think it was a little bit of like a, I don't know, kind of self-fulfilling goal of like, oh, maybe this will help me. And then I turned out to like love it and see all the progress in clients.
That is very fascinating. So what is normal sleep?
Oh,
like,
gosh.
How do you like what would be considered normal yeah. sleep? Like
because I can tell you what's abnormal. Like when you were saying the thing about like what's not normal, I'm like, there have been nights that I swear I slept half an hour. Because I know I'm thinking yeah. about something, right? So obviously we know that's abnormal. We know waking up a whole bunch is abnormal. So what's normal then, you know?
Yeah. Oh man, this was a big question. Okay, well, let's get down to like basics. So most people benefit from like 7 to 9 hours of sleep on average, but there certainly are like a few people who need less or more. I think those categories are like a pretty small in fact, I mean, I think I know that like it's a, like the folks who need less, it's a very small percentage. Mm-hmm. What else? I think we tend to think of like good sleep as a numbers game, but mm-hmm. it's actually more about like quality over quantity, unless your quantity is also poor, obviously. Okay. But it is really more about like the quality of your sleep, depending on what your sleep ability is. Sleep ability meaning like the number of hours that your body needs to function. So abnormal might look like very little sleep, like insomnia, right? You're not sleeping. You have trouble falling asleep. You might have trouble staying asleep. Meaning like a lot of nighttime awakenings, and especially if you struggle to fall back asleep after you wake up, and either a lot of trouble waking up in the morning or getting up like too early in the morning and unable to fall back asleep. So I think like a good night's sleep means that you got to sleep within a reasonable amount of time. This can certainly like vary. So reasonable, sorry, I'm taking a drink of water. Reasonable meaning like, I think if you're, I don't know, this is a subjective judgment, but like,
yeah,
for me, it takes about 20 minutes to fall asleep usually. Some people it takes longer. Some people like, I mean, I'm so jealous of them. Like they fall asleep when their head hits the pillow. Like my husband.
Oh my God, like, that's my husband.
My God.
Like yesterday he fell asleep. Like I went to use the restroom and I came out and it's pitch black. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like I'm tripping over things because like, I wasn't ready for that. And he's passed out. I like, that literally took me 2 minutes. How did that happen?
Like literally how did they get so lucky?
How did that, I mean, I don't know, that not me. So I'm with you.
Some people's biology, like fuck you, but good on you as well. So exactly. So, you know, and then I think also just like depending on functioning during the day, like are you absolutely exhausted all day long? Then like maybe let's examine sleep. Are you exhausted in the morning and then eventually you wake up? Like maybe that's normal. I don't know. So that's kind of how I would define like normal sleep, but like also the word normal.
Yeah. Like whatever. it totally makes sense. And so I guess my question would be like, then what are things that you're seeing with your clients that are impeding their sleep so that they're not getting those 7 to 9 or whatever. Mm-hmm. They're doing everything that like, you know, obviously my husband doesn't suffer through, you know, like he just, you know, like what is impeding people's sleep, you know?
All the things.
All the things.
I mean, name it, it probably does. But if we're going to like highlight the big hitters, I would say like maybe this is not like necessarily in order, but like one of my biggest ones is inconsistency. So you want to have like a consistent bedtime wake up time, especially the wake up time is the most important. And I know that's
really hard. I was gonna say that is so, I'm just thinking that is so hard. Like I cherish those days that I get to sleep in.
I know.
In the morning. And it's like, that's what I look forward to.
Right.
I can't sleep in. I wake up every single day at the same time. Like I don't even need the clock. No, I mean like I'm being serious. Like I cannot sleep in. Even if like I go to bed like a minute. Yeah.
You're blessed with an amazing circadian rhythm.
So, wow. I mean I have a few things that I'm like really excited to share with people, but I'm gonna put that on my bio from now on. Great circadian rhythm.
I have an excellent circadian rhythm. Yeah.
I mean that really tops a lot of other people. You know what I mean? Like I don't think they can all say that.
Yeah. It does. Yeah. So consistency is like so key. Okay, and then can I get into like a little crash course of like how the sleep system works?
We need that. Absolutely. Yes, please.
Okay.
We're all
okay.
Here taking notes. Yes.
It's going to get a little boring, but.
We won't fall asleep, we promise.
great. So we have two processes that regulate our sleep system. So the first, you can call them process S and C, or you can call them sleep drive and circadian rhythm. So sleep drive means that the longer you're awake and more active during the day, the stronger your sleep drive will be when you go to bed. And this is regulated by a neurotransmitter called adenosine. I don't know how people pronounce it, but, and so the question is like, what interferes with that release of that neurotransmitter? What interferes with that process? And it's primarily like naps. So if you have insomnia, naps are an absolute no-no. Unless naps are a big no-no. Think about it like if you have a snack before dinner time, like the closer you are to dinner time and you snack, the less hungry you're going to be. That's basically like how adenosine works. So if you are to nap, then you want to make them like very short and earlier in the like early afternoon. Also, getting into bed earlier than your what we call prescribed bedtime. So let's say like you want to wake up at 8 a.m. and you need 8 hours. That would be what, midnight? Yeah. Remember when I said I like math?
Yeah, I was like, wow, she, that was fast. Like,
I know.
Oh, really? I thought it wasn't.
No, I'm okay. Blessed only with circadian rhythms and counting, but not math abilities, apparently. So, yeah.
Yeah. So if you got into bed at like 10 p.m. being like, oh, I'm going to get so much more sleep tonight. This is going to be great. That's not particularly helpful for like regulating your sleep schedule. Okay. Yeah. And waking up later. So sorry, I can't remember who said that you love sleeping in.
Jen. You know what? I have been roommates with her in places, and she does love to sleep
asleep, I just love sleeping. I feel like it's like a gift when you get to sleep in.
Yeah, it truly is.
I think it goes back to my days of having to be at work at 7 o'clock in the morning and like needing to be there and having to get up so much earlier and being like so focused on that now it's like,
are you making up for lost time? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, I'm trying to.
Also, 7 a.m.
I also love a good nap.
Yeah.
What kind of job was this? It was 7 a.m. That's horrible, Jen. When was this?
It was. I had to be at work at 7 and it was a hospital. So like you had to be there at 7.
I remember. This sounds horrific. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, God.
And so it was like, I would be like, oh, I could just take a nap when I get home then.
And then you're messing up your sleep.
I am. So I do not have a good sleep.
CeCe's trying to tell us this.
I don't have good sleep.
But I will say like, I mean, shift workers are fucked.
Yeah.
Like that is so tough.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. You have it so tough and gross. Oh my God, that sucks. Oh, I can't even imagine. Yeah.
Can't either. Sorry, go ahead. So we need to rail sometimes. So.
No, I love it. I love it. So that's sleep drive. And then there's circadian rhythm, which, oh my God, I really want to preach this to the choir. It's basically like controlled by an internal biological clock. And it's typically written into your DNA. That's not to say that it can't be adjusted, but I stress this to advocate for my fellow night owls. I am certainly a night owl. Like, that is written into your DNA. And unfortunately, society is like for you, Jen, like, you have to be on top of things at 7 a.m. in the morning. If you're a night owl, Godspeed.
Yeah.
Like,
it.
Yeah, it's so tough. And like, there are ways of adjusting it, but it's still really hard. And the person who trained me in behavioral sleep science, his name is Phil Gurman. He's the best. He works at UPenn. He's a behavioral sleep scientist. And he always has advocated, like, if you can adjust your day-to-day schedule to your sleep schedule, that's what you need to do, because that'll be so much easier. But we live in a society where everyone's like, you got to show up at 8 or 9 a.m. and be on top of things, and like, not everybody can do that.
Agreed.
I did it for 11 years. Not having to get up at 7 o'clock, because I didn't work day shift the whole time, but maybe like 6 years I had to get up at, I had to be at work at 7 o'clock. So I had to get up at 5:30 every day, and it never got easier. Like that entire time, it never got easier. Now my schedule is way more flexible, and like, I'm up before I have to go to work. I'm up before I have to like do things. And I have a much better like sleep cycle.
Yeah.
Because I'm not like, I also don't have this fear of, oh my gosh, if my alarm doesn't go off,
right,
like, people are counting on me. Now it's not like that. It's
yeah.
Like, oh, okay. Well, some days I work from home. Some days I go to the office. So it's not, it's much better. But even after like 6 or 7 years of doing it, I never got used to it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's so rough. Yeah. And
I'm not a morning person.
Yeah. I had the same situation working in a school. I had to be there like by 8 a.m. and it was in Des Plaines. So it was like an hour and a half commute each way.
Oh my God.
And I'd walk in like 5 minutes late. My boss would be like, the principal would be like, you're 5 minutes late. And I'm like, listen, man, I'm just doing
I'm happy I'm here. I showed up.
Yeah, exactly. I can't even process anything right now. Give me a break.
But I do believe what you're saying about the DNA, like it's written there. And I can just say, just from having two girls and they're polar opposites, and Jen knows them obviously. Mm-hmm. And one of them, she wakes up without a clock, without a problem. The other one, I don't know where she came from, but I think it was my husband, because I know it was my husband. Okay. I'm not trying to like disclose weird. It was my husband. However, that's where genetically she's getting her sleep stuff, because she is like a bear and they both hibernate. Like, and I, and they love to nap, and I don't understand this obsession with sleep, but sorry, go ahead. No, I'm just totally a different story for a different day. Yeah.
So you're setting off like a fog horn in the morning to wake one of them up.
they will not. I mean, like that. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh no. Yeah.
So
yeah.
So if sleep is controlled with this internal clock, and then the, you know, mm-hmm. what do we do if we can't, if we have the problem Jen had for 11 years and we have to wake up, then what do we do?
Oh man. Okay, this is a really tough question, and one that I like still fully don't understand. So please contact Phil Kerman if you need to know. I mean, it's like an ongoing
at UPenn.
Yeah, it's an ongoing joke where like everybody in the consult group is like, "What? I don't understand this." but basically, like you use a combination of melatonin and light therapy to kind of move back your circadian rhythm. But this is the process that like I still don't understand. And full transparency, like I just don't get it. It needs to be like at a particular time because of the way sleep architecture works. So like you don't just take melatonin and then sit under a light lamp the next day. Like you have to administer it at a certain point in time. Mm-hmm. And so that's where I would recommend folks to do more research or find somebody smarter than me, because like I still can't get it. But that's what you use. You use melatonin like an hour before bed to move up your bedtime. And then in the morning, you sit under a light lamp for a period of time. And that's kind of how you adjust your sleep schedule. But if you can find a job that allows you to like work with your circadian rhythm, that is the easiest option.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So
can you also talk a little bit, I know it's kind of off topic, but can you talk a little bit about why would we use, Jen and I both know why we use melatonin, but if just pretend we didn't know for a minute, why would we use that? Like, what would that be useful for?
Ooh, that's a good question. And not one that I'm like super well versed on. I think you would primarily use it to, The way melatonin works is that it does not induce sleep. It just communicates to your brain that it is like time to go to sleep. And then your body kind of does the rest. So when used appropriately, like it can help kind of regulate things a bit. But I think the common misconception is that it's like, you know, a supplement to like help induce sleep. And that's not the case. But honestly, it's been a while since I've touched my toes in the water of like melatonin treatment. Mm-hmm. So I'm not super well versed these days.
So for those who are listening to this and thinking, ooh, mm-hmm. I might have a sleep issue.
Yeah.
What should we be asking ourselves if we believe that we might have a sleep issue?
Yeah. I mean, certainly not getting enough sleep or like chronic insomnia, right? Like you're not getting more than 5 hours of sleep on an average basis. You're getting the proper amount of sleep perhaps and still feeling absolutely fatigued and groggy and exhausted throughout the day. You get headaches. Now we're talking about like potential sleep apnea. And then a mismatch between like your societal responsibilities. So like we were talking about, like your circadian rhythm is mismatched with your lifestyle. That can cause some problematic sleep issues.
And so, you know, this is kind of off topic, but you had mentioned it before. What did you mean by sleep architecture? Like what is that? I've never heard that.
Shit. You're asking me the hard
questions. Oh. Oh my gosh, I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about that would be like, this is the cycles that we go through. Yeah. Is that what?
Yeah.
And if you don't mind, okay. It's like, can you talk a little bit about that, or at least like what we should know? Yeah. Because like, you know, here's the example that I always like, I talk about in private practice, like, let's pretend for a minute, like I'm sleeping and then my husband, who's like, I told you, a bear, and sleeping like, you know, like lights out forever. Let's pretend for a minute I wake up at the end of what I'm guessing is my sleep cycle because I hear a thunderstorm, but he's in the middle of REM sleep, but he's not going to hear it. Is that an accurate description of like how things work and why one would wake up and the other one didn't wake up and hear that noise? And do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, I think it certainly could. Like, so with the two different systems that regulate sleep, you've got the circadian rhythm and the sleep drive, right? Like, and we tend to go through, so sleep architecture essentially means like the different kind of, modules of sleep that we go through. So mm-hmm. we've got like mm-hmm. REM sleep, we've got like first phase, we've got like second phase. I'm totally butchering this and I'm sorry, Phil, if I'm totally butchering this. shout out to Phil who taught me this and now I'm butchering it. So we go through, I think it's usually around like four cycles of sleep a night. So we've got like our deep REM or our deep sleep, we've got our REM sleep and then our kind of like lighter sleep. So, and REM is basically like our, I don't want to say something that's wrong.
Yeah.
What I will say is when we're in REM sleep, our body shuts down all mm-hmm. ability to like, wait, no. Okay. Let's move on because I'm going to butcher this.
I think I understand where you're going because I think that like I used that example, like it, I don't believe, I think that you, it's harder to wake up right in REM sleep. Like it's a deeper, it just really, that's what we are looking for, right? Is the more REM sleep.
But it's more, it's more active too though. Right. Like it's called rapid eye movement, right? Like basically like REM sleep is, it paralyzes our body mm-hmm. So that we like can't act out dreams or anything, right? And then there's a deeper form of sleep that's, I don't know if you guys have ever heard stories about like people who like kill people while they're sleepwalking.
What kind of sleep is that? Because I don't think I've had that one.
You definitely have. You definitely have. That's.
Oh wait. Okay. That was me then. That was me. I did it.
You did it. You killed your in-laws. Yeah, that happened.
No.
yeah. So that's like when we're in REM sleep, where our bodies like paralyze themselves so that we can't act out our dreams. But that's when we're like actually having the most brain function, if I'm correct. And then this deep sleep is when what we call parasomnias happen. So that is like sleepwalking, sleep talking, definitely sleepwalking. And so like there's stories, not to freak people out, but like stories where people have been in like a deep state of sleep and they have sleepwalked and killed their in-laws. I'm thinking of one story in particular.
My goodness. Oh, okay, not an urban myth, a real story.
No, it actually happened. That's really, really okay, sad.
I will share that I was a huge sleepwalker and sleep talker as a child. Did I ever tell you this, John? Yeah, so like I used to be like, suddenly in a closet. My mother's like, what are you doing? You know, or like I got on the phone once and I called whatever company she was working at, they had, they must have had like second shift people or third shift people. And I'm like, and I asked her, my mother, and they're like, she is not here. And then my mother heard me on the phone because I had one of those clear plastic phones that had all the components because I'm an 80s girl. And so my mother heard me and she like picked up the phone and she told the person, I will call you right back on her line. And then she went in my room and took the phone and, you know, put it on the receiver and then put me to bed. And I had no idea. And so like now I think I was really weird. Like I was a really weird kid. Why did I do all these things? No. I don't know why. I don't know. I mean,
no,
it's love just, my sleep, I guess, you know?
Yeah. It's just a parasomnia. I mean, I've had clients who like literally wake up in the middle of the night. No, sorry. They don't wake up. They have a parasomnia and they like eat dirt and like,
the first thing I would have picked up.
No. It can be bad.
Even Oreos,
it can
be very,
obviously. Yeah. I mean, I sleep talk all the time and I have this like new recording app. Like some of the shit I've said in my sleep. Like one night I told my husband, I'm actually going to murder you. Like very clearly.
Very clearly. Did he hear you?
No, he was
asleep. Oh good.
He was just snoring away. And the next day I wake up and I'm like, hey, listen to this.
I didn't say that. That wasn't me.
No, it was me. It was my deep sleep mode. Sorry. Yeah. So parasomnias are super fun.
Yes. That's so super interesting.
Fun. Yeah.
That is
fascinating.
Well, Cece, you had mentioned some of the things that impede sleep. And so what role how does anxiety play a role in sleep? Because I know when I'm anxious about something that's happening the next day, something that is just increasing my anxiety, sleep is not my friend that night.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's a pretty simple and frankly, like, you know, it's a pretty easy answer. It just like keeps you awake because your gears keep turning in your head. So it's pretty common sense, right? Like if you're just more stressed out, our brains are working harder and worrying. And the more we worry, the more we are aroused and like activated and the more likely we are to not get sleep. And then especially if we're worried about sleep, that's like the perfect storm for not sleeping, right? Like the more we worry about sleep, the less sleep we're likely to get. But you know, we can't quite get rid of worry. We just need to like work on how we respond to it. So that's one of the components of behavioral sleep medicine is like working on the cognitive therapy part. And working on how we're thinking about sleep, how we're worrying. You know, so we always talk about the benefits of a good night's sleep, which sounds very counterintuitive, but there are actually huge benefits to surrendering like the short-term effects of a poor night's sleep for the long-term gains, right? And so, you know, reminding yourself that if you're worrying about sleep, not getting enough of it, that your sleep drive, that adenosine neurotransmitter will get higher. You're more likely to have a higher sleep drive the next day, few days. And then thinking about, I mean, this probably doesn't help a lot of people, but like, what can you do while you're awake? And now we're kind of getting into like the treatment of insomnia, but one of the main treatment kind of modalities is like what we call stimulus control. And so when you're in your bed and you're doing anything other than sleep and sex, like your odds of falling asleep are much higher, right? So if you think about a person who only uses their bed for sleep and sex, they've got a one
sleep. If you think about somebody who,
excuse me, sorry, I take drink water. Use sleep, sex, work, entertainment, social media. We now have like a 1 out of 5 chance of falling asleep. So you really want to like build that association between your bed and bedroom being only for sleep and sex. I'm losing my train of thought.
I think that makes a lot of sense though, because it's like training your brain. Like, what do you do in a library? You're quiet. You know, what do you do in your bedroom? You're sleeping.
Yeah.
But if you're also like, you know, like baking cookies, and I don't know why I said that, but like, you know what I mean? Or like, you know what I mean? Like writing your great American novel, then that's not going to help.
Going down a TikTok rabbit hole.
Jen, by the way, so we have it, like, I do not understand TikTok still, but Jen loves it so much. It's so funny how much she loves it. I mean, but I will be honest, I'm an Instagram girl, like a reels girl. So I, you know, it's the same
thing as TikTok. It's just a different name.
You're just so much younger. I sound younger when you say, I like TikTok. I'm like, oh, Jen, come on.
I'm cooler.
You are much cooler than I am. Not the cool one.
Hip and with it.
Yeah.
Sorry, we go off on. And, yeah. Okay. So don't do those things. Just sleep and sex. Okay.
Yeah. Don't do those things. Don't hang out in your bed. Or I mean, certainly like your phone, because blue light will wake you up.
Okay.
So you want to be mindful of like watching TV in bed, being on socials in your bed. All of those things will wake you up more. And usually, like, when you're on socials, like, you're either enthralled by some, like, funny cat video or comparing yourself.
Jen, like, Jen.
Yeah. Or comparing yourself to that, like, seventh grade friend that you're not friends with anymore. Like, it's just generally not going to be helpful for feeling restful.
It's more stimulating.
Exactly.
Oh, how this very is so true.
Yeah.
And then the blue light. We crafted a whole episode just for you, Jen.
I know.
It's really, I mean,
you're welcome.
I'm gonna get a good night's sleep tonight.
I love it.
Okay. So anxiety and a lot of other issues like blue light and, you know, doing all kinds of crazy things in your room other than sleep and sex, are all impeding on our, like, so should we have that's not part of our sleep routine should be those things, but like,
correct.
Like if we're getting ready to go to bed, when you said before earlier, when it's insomnia treatment, we take that if we were to take that melatonin and do light therapy or whatever that looks like, when should we be starting? Like, if I want to go to bed, like if I want Jen to go, I know what time I go to bed. Okay, let's use Jen as the example, because obviously she's the wayward one here. So if Jen wants to go to bed at 11 o'clock instead of 1 in the morning, because I know sometimes she probably wants to do that, what should she do? Like, and she's starting to do this, what should she do to get to that point? Like, what should her routine look like? When should she start, you know, scaling back so that she doesn't hit the 1 o'clock and she's closer to 11 o'clock?
Yeah. That's a great question. Start with the wake up time. So
start backwards. Okay.
Yeah. So you start backwards. So what is the wake up time? That is usually like the best place to start. Remain consistent with that. So let's say the wake up time is like 8 a.m. How many hours of sleep do you want to get? Okay. Let's say 8. Great. Okay. So midnight is going to be your bedtime. However, let's say you have insomnia and your sleep ability, meaning like the amount of hours that you're able to sleep right now on average is like 6, then you're gonna basically start your bedtime routine. Okay, what's 8 minus 6? 2 a.m. Around like 1 a.m. So this is what we call sleep restriction. So we're basically intentionally inducing drowsiness and sleep deprivation to help your body kind of recalibrate their natural like sleep systems. So,
wow.
Yeah. And this is the part of treatment that people fucking hate, obviously.
Well, no, because it almost sounds like why would it make sense? But you're saying you want to go to bed sleepy. Like you want to be tired
when you're sleeping.
Exactly. And reduce the amount of time that you're like laying in bed, putting in sleep effort. You know, if you're like, I need to get a full 8 hours and you get into bed and you're just like sitting there pissed off that you can't go to sleep. Like that is counterintuitive. You know, so, and I would recommend folks who do this, while you can do it independently, it's probably helpful to have like a behavioral sleep person supporting you.
Okay.
But you can probably do it on your own. So you would go to bed at 2 a.m. You would start your wind down routine around 30 minutes to an hour. And you want to make that like, you know, a relaxing process. Maybe you'll do some like relaxation meditations of some sort. Oh, you can also take a hot bath.
Oh, that wouldn't wake you up. It would kind of make you sleepier. Okay.
It would make you sleepier because so our body temperature drops to the lowest it does all day when we're sleeping. And that's also,
I didn't know that.
Yeah. That's also partly what induces sleep. So when we take like a super hot bath, not like scalding, but like bath, our body, it sounds counterintuitive because it's like, well, wouldn't that make you like super hot? Yes, it does. But when you get out of the bath, your body is trying so hard to like cool itself down that that's why like most people feel sleepy after a hot bath. So
did you know that, Josh?
Yeah.
I didn't, but I knew it worked. I mean, I know like, when you take it, like I just figured it was the whole like relaxation.
Yeah. I mean, that doesn't hurt. That's part of it.
It's got like the biological benefits.
Mm-hmm.
That's really,
and actually when
it's hot, you can't sleep.
exactly. That's why you want your bedroom to be like cooler and like, And actually when I was getting trained, Phil was like, I want everybody to like practice this and try it out. And so me and my colleague both like took hot baths, but we also added some wine to the mix.
Oh, okay. Now, did that help or hurt? Because I feel like I could also. Yeah. you don't want to do that. It's like you know, drinking in a sauna. Very bad idea.
Yeah. So don't do that.
Not that I've tried that. Just in case my parents are listening, because sometimes they're listening too. I didn't do that. So I would think that it would like, because like I feel like alcohol wakes me up. I know it's a depressant, but I feel like it really messes up my sleep. Alcohol, I can't drink during the week because not even a glass. So that also would be something that maybe impedes sleep. Do you think?
Correct. It certainly does. Alcohol, caffeine, nicotine, all the things.
Yeah.
I mean, within like hours of sleep, it's not to say that like, I mean, if your insomnia is like real bad and that's also a problem, then like we've got a comorbid situation on our hands. But but yeah, you generally want to really try to avoid substances before bed, hours before bed, rather.
Okay.
So don't do what I did. Don't take a hot bath with a glass.
I'd almost pass out. Well, I mean,
because you might pass out.
You didn't. So there you go.
I didn't. I made it through. But yeah.
But this brings us to the next question is like, maybe not that, but what are the best treatment modalities if you have sleep issues? Like what would you, you know, other than a hot bath minus the alcohol, but like, what would you say, would it be to do behavioral sleep medicine? What would you recommend? Like now we've identified, I have a problem. You know, maybe Jen isn't admitting it, but I think she does. Or maybe not anymore because she had the job that she wanted, you know, but let's just pretend you're Jen, you know, and you've had this. So like, you are really? Oh,
no.
Oh, you're not. Okay. I thought you said you were. Okay, good. Okay.
We'll just pretend.
I'm worried about you. Okay. We'll just pretend.
We're all
Cece, what would you say? I know. It's all about Jen today. I love it.
It is.
Cece, what would you say would be like good treatment modalities if you had a Jen come in?
Sure. I mean, CBTI.
Or anybody, yeah.
Yeah, CBTI, CBT for insomnia is, in my opinion, the gold standard for insomnia treatment, which, like, involves, you know, the sleep restriction, cognitive therapy, working on, like, the worrying about sleep. Oh, and another thing to note is, like, most common misconception about sleep is that if you don't get enough sleep, you're going to be like completely screwed the next day. That's not entirely true. Like if you have some sort of like new kind of novelty experience the next day. Like if you're giving like a huge presentation or a TED talk, I don't know, then yeah, like it's gonna impede that a little bit. However, most people don't have that, right? Like if you get a poor night's sleep and you're just going to work as usual, it's really actually not going to impede your performance as much as we think it does. Granted, I will note that like if somebody operates like heavy machinery or like drives a while, like that is actually dangerous. So that's the other thing to consider is like if you are going on a road trip like and you're very sleep deprived, like that's pretty dangerous, and it's almost as dangerous as like drinking and driving. So you want to be mindful of those items, but otherwise if you're going and performing like your daily routine activities, like it's really not going to actually impede that much. So what was the question again?
So you were saying CBT for insomnia.
Yes, CBT for insomnia.
Cognitive therapy,
relaxation training, and then the stimulus control is the big part too. So that's more of like a behavioral intervention. So like if you are awake in bed, okay, so like the way it goes is like there's a jingle, like if you're awake and you know it, get out of bed.
I love a song.
That's the jingle we use. So if you are lying awake in bed, you're putting in any sleep effort, you're frustrated that you can't sleep, and you're just getting like overall pissed off, then you get out of bed. And again, that goes back to that component of like sleep and sex only. So like yes, for some people, like for me, it takes me 20 to 30 minutes to fall asleep. And I usually do like some light reading, or maybe listen to a murder podcast. Yeah, that's
like, you know what? A true crime is a real relaxation for me as well. I mean,
more blood,
you know, there will be blood. I love it. And it's really relaxing. You know, that's how my husband works.
Yeah. My husband most nights is like, can you not? It's like, and she was scalped, and I'm like,
yeah, and it was her husband.
Yeah. It's really relaxing to me. So yeah, you do like some light exercise to kind of like, basically you want to find some sort of activity that is stimulating enough to keep you out of your head, but not overly stimulating to where you're like, well, now I'm like hyper-focused on this and I can't fall asleep. So for whatever reason, because I'm a psychopath, true crime works for me. So that's kind of what you want to do. And then if you can, it still cannot fall asleep, you want to get out of bed. So it can be helpful for folks with like insomnia to have kind of a little like nook where they can either they go to their couch or they go to their guest room. Even sitting up in bed, if like, because this is the part that folks are most resistant to for good reason. Like it's not fun having to get out of bed when you're sleepy. Mm-hmm. But again, like the goal is we're breaking that association between wakefulness, arousal, and your bed. So that's stimulus control. And then there's always sleep hygiene, which is pretty intuitive and most people kind of understand how to create good sleep hygiene.
Okay.
Yeah,
does that answer the question?
Yes.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yes, and it has been very helpful.
Cool.
To learn all of this and to know what I'm doing wrong with the
one. Admitting is the first step. You know? Yeah. FYI. So I've heard.
Cece, to kind of shift slightly a little bit, but we ask kind of our guests a set of questions that we just kind of go through with every topic. And so what would you say that people should expect or not expect in therapy?
Oh man, that's a really good question. I think that first and foremost, it's not going to be what you think of, like, in terms of, like, talk therapy. Like, yes, it will kind of be at times, but, like, it is more processed than that. Like, there is more structure and modalities that we're applying to kind of support you. So you're not going to just come in, plop down on the couch and just like tell me everything that's going wrong. And I'm just like, yeah, I hear you. Cool. Oh man. Like it doesn't really look like that. It's a bit more, you know, like you can experience some challenging respectfully in like a validating way. There is no like goals to get you to do something that like you, well, okay, that's not correct. But I'm trying to think of like folks who are scared of couples therapy, for example, because they're worried that like that's going to lead to like an urge to divorce your partner. Like it's not going to be that, right? Like we will have shared goals that are completely based on what you need, what you want. If I see those goals to be like mismatched in some way, like, yeah, like I will name that and I will call that out and we'll work through that. And like, it can go at your own pace, right? Like people mm-hmm. like don't have to show up for a session and like bear their inner most troubling emotions. Like we'll take time to like get to know each other. Like it's still a relationship. And one that requires a sense of safety. Trying to think what else. I don't know. I'm trying to think of like what misconceptions are out there about therapy. I think it's mostly like you just sit and listen to somebody talking and it's like, mm-hmm. not that at all. Yeah, but it's like also a very empowering experience, especially for somebody who is a bit more emotion averse.
What do you like? I mean, you know, we've been talking with you and it's actually been the opposite of what the topic is. Like it's nobody's sleeping now. Like, you know what I mean? Everybody's hopefully had a few laughs with us because we've certainly enjoyed talking to you. But you know, as you're talking about this, we can feel like how much you care. What do you like most about your work?
Oh my gosh, all the things. I think honestly, like my bio kind of like I think describes it well, but I love people and I think everybody is like so resilient more than they know. And selfishly, it inspires me like every day. I'm like, oh, wow, aww. I'm fucked in that regard. Look at this person doing this. Like, it's really, really, really cool. It's really inspiring. It's really beautiful. It's also, like, scary how intense the brain can be and how intense mm-hmm. our thinking can be. And it can be heartbreaking. But, like, at the end of the day and at the end of that road, everybody is so much more resilient than they think they are, so much more, and have so much to offer and have so much to inspire others. And it breaks my heart a little bit when people don't see that. It breaks my heart a lot, actually, when people don't see that. But I view it as like genuinely a gift that I get to see that even when they don't see it themselves.
That is so wonderful.
I agree. And I feel like it's such a hopeful.
Yeah.
It's like it gives us so much hope.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
What would you say is the most frequently asked question that you get either personally, professionally, when you tell people what you do?
I think the biggest one, which is kind of a combination of professional and personal, is like, how do you listen to folks who are struggling and work with, like I said, it's beyond just listening, but like, and work with folks who are struggling all day long and then like go home and like nurture yourself and like not be like wildly impacted by that. And I don't have the answer to that. Partly. I mean, I'm kind of joking, but you know, it does get hard. It does. It really does get hard. And you know, I think the most important thing is like leaning on my support system. You know, trying to really practice what I preach, which also gets very hard sometimes. And then giving myself grace when I can't, you know, show up for myself mm-hmm. or even my clients in the way that I really want to all the time. Like I really do my best to try to show up for my clients with as much as I can give them, but we all have weeks and stuff that we're dealing with. And
right.
And I think just like honoring that authentically is a good way of like also modeling to others that like we're all human and we're doing mm-hmm. our best. So, you know, I mean, overall, I love what I do, but you know, we're humans and yeah, we're fallible.
Yeah. And it really, and it does show that you, not that you're mm-hmm. valuable, that you're human and that you love what you do.
What are you saying? What are you saying?
I'm saying, let's read between the lines. I'm just kidding. No, but it's true though. I mean, I think that when you show yourself to be someone that cares for the work that you do, it's so obvious to us, you know? And so, you know, we're so grateful that you came on today, and we have one more question, and it kind of, you know, it goes back to, why did we start this podcast anyways, Jen? Other than because we like to work together. And we had time during the pandemic. So like we kept going. But you know, what is something that you think somebody who, you know, should know about therapy, but maybe they're afraid to ask? And it could be anything, like because mm-hmm. that was the whole purpose of us starting the podcast, is like answering the questions, answering the, you know, this kind of therapy, whether it's couples, whether it's, you know, testing, whether it's, you know, should I take my child to a therapist, whatever mm-hmm. that is, or what should I take medication? We've mm-hmm. interviewed a lot of different people, and that's why we wanted to talk to you about sleep today. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. outside of sleep, or even about sleep, what do you feel like is something that people that, you know, should know about therapy or sleep or any of the topics we've covered today, mm-hmm. but they might be scared to ask, and you'd want to give them some info on?
I mean, I immediately think of my mom saying, "We don't air our dirty laundry." Mm-hmm. Like, you know, and obviously, like, yeah, generational differences, like that's reason, mm-hmm. that's fair. But I think I want people to know that, like, we're not scary. Like, we're not here to, like, fuck your life up. Sorry for feeling. Sorry, I curse like a sailor, if you can't tell. But like,
that's okay. We've heard them all. We've also worked with teenagers, you know.
So. Yeah. Like I'm not here to, you know, completely disentangle your life in a way that is not helpful to you. Like, we are on your side always. And yes, we will challenge you. You know, but in a way that is paced and still authentic and still honors your autonomy in an authentic way. And I don't know, I think a lot of folks fear therapy because it's super, super vulnerable, and that is mm-hmm. absolutely fair. And we will do, like, a good therapist will do their best to hold that vulnerability and pace it in a way that feels safe to you. So I just don't want people to fear therapy anymore. Like, we know mental health is such an epidemic, and like, I don't know, I just wish people had more access or more willing to access. Mm-hmm. Because it really can be a beautiful thing and a really, really, really special relationship that can create the change that you're looking for.
I love that. And I think it was very well said. And I shouldn't say we, I can't speak for Jessica, but Oh, I had so much fun having you. Having you on the show tonight. This was such a delight.
Yeah, this was so fun.
Thank you so much for coming to our podcast.
Of course. Thank you for having me. This was a blast. I'm sorry for the curse words.
Oh, no apologies needed.
No, no. You made our like first show back after a little small hiatus so much fun.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
And not sleepy or yawn inducing no. at all. Even though that was our topic, right?
Exactly.
Do exactly. not listen. We should put a warning label. Do not listen to this 30 minutes yeah. before, because no. Stacey said you're trying to go to sleep. Do not listen to us. You will yeah. be wide awake.
This
and
will
laughing hysterically.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, well, thank you so much for coming on. And for more information on Cece Burke and her work, you can find her at www.dascchicago.com or email her at Cece Burke, that's CCBURKE, at dascchicago.com. Thank you for listening.
It rhymes. Sorry.
Thank you for listening, and as always, subscribe to the Everything You Want to Know About Therapy But We're Too Afraid to Ask podcast everywhere you listen to good podcasts, and give us your 5-star review. Follow us on Instagram at therapy_podcast_ for updates, additional information, and message us topics and questions you've always wanted to know but were too afraid to ask. Thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoyed this podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us wherever you listen to good podcasts, and keep up with episode updates on Instagram. Follow us at therapy_podcast_. You can send us messages on topics you'd like to hear or anything that comes to mind. Bye for now.